Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, Deputy Features Editor at Billboard and Broadway Obsessive in Residence here. So usually the summer is kind of a quieter time for Broadway. Usually there is the fall season and then the spring season leading up to the Tony Awards, but then things kind of calm down, relatively speaking, for a little while. So it was exciting going into this past summer when there was definitely one major show, at least, to look forward to opening, and it was called Head Over Heels. The show had a lot of buzz for various reasons, including the fact that Gwyneth Paltrow was randomly one of the producers. But mostly it was because this new musical was using the songs of the Go-Go's as its score. I was also optimistic about it because the director, Michael Mayer, has proven to be really adept in the past at heading up kind of rock-leaning musicals. He directed Spring Awakening and American Idiot, both of which were great. And I actually spoke to Mayer in the spring about Head Over Heels as one of a slew of new musicals that are taking the songs of female artists as their scores. And he described this particular moment in musical theater as one when, quote, women are finally getting to be in the driver's seat. That turned out to be a perfect description of Head Over Heels itself. The Go-Go's music is not the score for a story of their life in this case, so it's not a typical jukebox musical per se. In fact, the story could not be farther from the 80s California pop-punk world in which the Go-Go's became famous. The story is definitely more in the kind of silly Monty Python meets Shakespeare meets Greek myth sort of vein, I would say. It is not the typical fairy tale storyline at all. I'll just say that the two heroines, who are both princesses, are not traditional Broadway ingenues in the least. And this show turns out to be very funny on the whole, very refreshing, and has a really exciting progressive feel that makes it a lot of fun to see. And the Go-Go's music, which is a mix of their hits but also some lesser known songs, turns out to really be the perfect soundtrack for a story that is ultimately about breaking free of society's expectations. The cast members who came to the podcast this week tell the rather complex plot better than I ever could, and they have a lot to say about why the Go-Go's were the perfect musical match for the story. So here is my chat with Head Over Heels, Andrew Durand, Bonnie Milligan, and Alexandra Sosha. So tell me who you people are and who you play in the show.
I'll start. I'm Andrew Durand. I play Musidorus in the show. He is a lowly shepherd boy in this kingdom full of princesses and kings and queens. And he is in love with one of the princesses. And he desperately wants to be with her. And his pleas to be with her are turned down by the king. And the family, they're all leaving the kingdom because of these doomed prophecies they've received from the oracle. And he decides to follow them. And his way of infiltrating the family to win his princess is disguising himself as an Amazonian princess, warrior, whatever you want to call her. Beautiful woman with a long blonde wig and Madonna-esque cone boobs and high heels and everything.
Flashing his legs all the time.
And the whole royal family sort of starts to fall for him, hilarity ensues.
It's like half the plot in just one character description.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
and it should be noted that you have an excellent number with sheep, which was one of my favorite parts of the show.
Yes. My male chorus of backup sheep. It's fantastic.
Yes. Yes. I'm Bonnie Milligan. I play the eldest princess, not the one that Andrew pines for, sadly. I am the most beautiful girl in all the land and thwarting all of my male suitors. And as the show kind of goes, as we go on this journey of really self-discovery, we kind of find out why I don't like any of those guys.
Wink, wink.
Wink. Wink.
And I'm Alexandra Socha, and I play the younger sister, Princess Philoclea, who is, if Pamela, Bonnie's character, is the most beautiful, most sought-after girl in the world, Philoclea is referred to as plain and sweet and kind of simple. And but she is such. She's also a good girl, which that comes into play with one of the Go-Go songs, Good Girl. She's sort of known as the girl who does what's best for all. And her journey in learning to fight for her love of Musidorus, which has been rejected by her father, is how to also do what is best for herself.
So it's the plot is, as we've seen, sort of like complicated to describe. But I mean, how do you all think of the story? Because it's like, it's kind of like a play on Shakespeare. It's kind of Greek mythy. It's also like feels like Monty Python to me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I call it a modern day fairy tale. It's very fast paced. It's a, you know, a romantic comedy, but you're following one family who have been kind of set in their ways the way this king has kind of set the rule of the land, and he's not very open to many things other than like what he thinks should be. So an oracle essentially calls upon him and says, you can't go down this path because, you know, change is good and these prophecies are going to happen and you're not going to like them. And so the family goes on the road, but the family doesn't know. It's just the king trying to run away from these prophecies. So it is very Shakespearean in the idea of, you know, mistaken identity. And, you know, like Andrew said, as he dresses up in drag to go after the woman he loves. And that's in so many different Shakespearean tales. And our text itself is in free verse, and a lot is in iambic pentameter. Mm. But with the music of the Go-Go's. So it's kind of its own category, which is what's really exciting about our show, is I think it's, I don't think I've seen anything like it. It's very different and just funny and feel good. You walk away hopefully feeling a little bit lighter than when you walked in.
Yeah, and it has, because of the way the script is, it has sort of an old school theatrical vibe, the whole aesthetic of the show. So like it's really fun to for an audience, I think, to see that sort of thing, because we don't get that very much anymore. There's so much sort of projections and automation and things like that. It's sort of like salt of the earth theater, you know. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also there's definitely an awareness of the audience being there. It feels like there's a bit more communion between the actors and the audience. Like the sense of humor is like tongue very firmly in cheek. It feels like there's a lot of winking going on. And
especially with comedy, I feel like you have to have this open conversation going with the audience at all times to, you know, learn where they are and then to learn where you are and know what jokes are going to, you know, different jokes go over different ways every night, which is exciting because it keeps it really fresh and new at each performance.
What's great about the Hudson, where our theater that we're at, is it feels close. So the audience is really with us. So it's so easy to have that open line of communication with what they're, you know, picking up on and what we're laying down. So it's cool.
And I think what keeps it charming is that it is tongue-in-cheek, but we never go into camp and we never sort of like, it's all comes from a place of honesty of what these characters are going through and what they're trying to get and achieve. And I think that's what makes it so charming.
So, Bonnie, you were just saying, which is the number one thing that jumps out about the show, is that the combination of this storyline and the Go-Go's music is like
very different and not the way we're used to seeing like a pop canon presented on Broadway. And I think it goes a long way towards making the show work that it's not a bio musical. Yeah. It's not trying to create some story that strings the songs together. It's like a story that the music happens to fit very well in a weird way. So when you all heard this kind of story with the Go-Go's music, did you immediately think genius, or did it take a minute to kind of like absorb, okay, this is why this works well?
I think I came in a little bit later than both Bonnie and Andrew, and I actually was asked to do this workshop lab of the show 2 days before it started. So I hadn't even read it. I heard Michael Mayer's directing and all this, and I showed up and then I got handed the script on the second day. And honestly, when I read the script, I was like, this sounds fantastic. Like, any thoughts of people being like, oh, it's Go-Go's music, oh, it's Elizabethan, and you're like, what? The second you actually look at the text and look at the story happening, I don't know, all those doubts go right out the window for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's amazing. We get verbal reactions from the audience when, you know, a song starts at a certain place in our story, and they're like, oh, like, I know this song, and how amazing and surprising that it's fitting in right here so well with what's happening in the story. It's like an exciting element of the show for the audience, you know, especially because people might think they're going in and they're seeing a show about the Go-Go's, but it has nothing to do with them, yet their music propels the story so fantastically.
I've even had some people that were like, okay, but some of those are Go-Go songs, but some are written for the show, right? And you're like, no, because they fit so well. It's kind of crazy. But it's amazing because it's opening up the world of the Go-Go's to like a whole new generation. We've had like a really big following, especially of like 14, 15-year-olds that now have gone and bought the Go-Go's albums and are now listening to them and are huge fans now. It's amazing. Because their music still speaks volumes.
Well, for me, it made me listen to their music in a very different way because I mean, like most people, I, you know, love their songs that everybody gets up to and dances to at a wedding or at a dance. And you think of them as, you know, foremost these kind of like sunny California girls with guitars. But depending on the point in the show, I feel like, oh, these are really sad songs, or these are like really angsty songs.
Yeah. Their lyrics are really deceptively simple, and they like their lyrics lend themselves to storytelling so well. A big one we use is Vacation. You know, everybody knows the chorus to Vacation, but when you listen to the lyrics, it does have this sadder undertone, and the way it's used in our show when one of the characters leaves and is away from the person she loves, it has this whole other meaning to it that is different than dancing at a wedding.
I was gonna say Vacation is actually the perfect example because I felt so stupid. I was sitting there and I was like, have I never listened to the words of Vacation before? Like, this is a really sad song.
Well, even like Good Girl is another one that the Jane and Charlotte, we had been at, what was the Dramatists Guild Foundation Gala.
Yes.
And Alexandra and I went to sing a song. This was last fall. And they were talking about like coming to Broadway, and they were talking about Good Girl, about how when they wrote it, they were just like, we'd always been told we couldn't do it because we were all girls. Like, because they were really the first band to be all female to write their own songs and play their own songs and have top hits. And people told them they couldn't. And so it's like, oh, I guess I'll be a good dog, good girl. How about I write an epitaph on my grave? And you're like, whoa, like it's so punk rock. And like, and it's amazing because it's like this like bop of a song is actually really intense. Yeah. And it just came from their frustration of being told they could only be one thing. They're amazing groundbreakers. And so their lyrics are like deep. It's really great to learn more about them.
Did you all listen to them at all growing up, or has this kind of been a Go-Go's education for you?
I mean, I definitely did. My mom listened to like 70s, 80s radio hits when I was a kid growing up, so I knew a lot of the songs.
And the big hits I'd heard, and several of their songs had been on like movie soundtracks. Like I talk about Beautiful being the opening credits of Superstar, which I love. but I hadn't like gone deep into their catalog, no. So I learned a lot, and I'm now a huge fan of theirs because of the show.
Yeah, I think a lot of them I didn't realize I knew, or I knew them, I didn't know it was them. We were, when we were first rehearsing it, and I didn't know anything about it.
And like Bonnie started singing Beautiful. And I went, wait, that's one of their songs? Oh, I love that song. And you started singing Mad About You. And I was like, wait, I love that song. So I just didn't even know that they had written so many huge, huge songs.
Well, and their hits are almost sort of a small percentage of what you hear in the show.
Yeah, because
I was
truly
there were songs I'd never heard before, like Here You Are, that I absolutely love now, and I was listening to it on repeat like a million times the day after I saw the show. Yeah. So it was really cool to kind of go deeper into their catalog. So did I know that they were variously part of the process. Like, what kind of interactions did you have with the ladies themselves as you were getting the show ready?
Well, Jane and Charlotte have been the most involved, I would say, just in that when we were doing workshops and labs, they would be there in rehearsal at times. But all of them have seen it more than once.
Yeah, they really jumped on board like 2 years ago when this Michael Mayer and his team came on. We went up to New York Stage and Film to and Andrew joined the cast then. I had been a part of it for a couple years prior. So that's when Jane Wiedlin and Charlotte Caffey and Gina Schock all came out, and they were really there. Like, they were there what, like half a week?
Yeah,
like,
well, we were there for two weeks in total. And they came out, about a week of it.
And we had the 4th of July up there was our day off, and we all had a pool party. And it was amazing because they were. And I had like at least 20-minute individual conversations with all three of them that day. They're amazing and just so excited to be kind of present and be part of the process. And like Alexandra said, like, we would do the next reading. Charlotte came in for that. And then the lab, they all, you know, they've liked to be there if they can. They're very busy, and they still, you know, were touring at that point in here. And they just played the Hollywood Bowl. I mean, like, they're still going. So when they can be there, they are. And they're supportive and so amazing because they're legends that are just like...
They're
amazing.
So excited to be on Broadway.
They are. I don't think they foresaw this. And so they just, and they love the show. They, you know, you can always tell when Jane is in the audience because she has the best laugh ever. Yes. And she likes to laugh really, really loud at parts, especially to get other people around her to laugh, I think, which is fun.
And we're funny.
Yes, and we're fun. And because we're funny.
Also, we're funny.
But it's always very cool because it isn't their story, because it has taken their music and put it into this other thing and entity, and they love that. Love the story that's being told with their music.
Which was actually something they said at the beginning. They didn't want a bio musical. They're like, nah, I don't want that. Like, our catalog is open, but like, they specifically wanted like different pitches and ideas. Because they're like, nobody wants to hear about our band. I was like, well, I think people would. Yeah. But, but that was actually something they desired, was like an original story with their music. So I think they're really pleased with how it came out.
As long as we're talking about the creators, I have to ask, when the news about this show first broke, everyone was like, Gwyneth Paltrow is producing a Broadway play. Like, have you had any Gwyneth encounters?
Oh, yeah. Oh, actually, the three of us probably got the got the really good one. when we were still raising money for the show, we all got to – she did have a investor's luncheon at her home out in – East Hampton, and it was really lovely, and I think we got it was, and so we went out and we sang, and she gave a wonderful speech about the show and why she believed in it, and so did Michael Mayer, our director, and
yeah, it was cool to have.
And then we drank rosé on
Tom Kitt on Tom Kitt on the piano, and Charlotte Caffey playing a guitar while you sang in
Gwyneth Paltrow's house
living room. And like, that's really cool.
And she was the most. Actually, Gwyneth was like, I can't believe a go-go is about to play in my living room. Yeah. Like, because she's a huge fan of the band. But at the same time, she's on it. There's these days with Broadway, there's multiple producers. Yeah. So she's in. You know. Like, she's not the one who's there every day. That's Christine Russell and Louise Gund are the ones who are doing the nitty-gritty everyday work.
But she as well, she would come out to see, you know, the presentations of our labs and our workshops and everything. She was always, you know, she always knew what was going on.
Yeah,
with it.
Came to the opening in San Francisco.
Maybe there's some goop in your future.
There you go.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments.
Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Well, I actually spoke to Michael about the show, I think right before the San Francisco production was starting, and we were talking about the fact that it's like, you know, it's been in the works for a couple of years now, but it's like feels so super, super timely in like every way possible.
Yeah.
And I was curious, I mean, I know you've all been with the show for varying amounts of time, but was it always as progressive as it is now? Like, I feel like the whole show almost has a kind of queer sensibility.
Yeah.
Or was that something that evolved as it got closer to Broadway?
It's both. I mean, it's always definitely been progressive. There's a speech, I don't know how much we want to give away, at the end that Musidorus has about kind of exploring this, you know, gender identity and presentation and the fluidity that was there 3 years ago when I did it at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival.
Oh, wow.
There used to be a piece in there about kind of fighting for marriage, and that's gone now because I remember that happened in Oregon, and there was the marriage equality bill passed, and that night it was like thunderous applause and we had to hold because that had been in there. And so it's interesting how then you go, okay, so how else can we progress? And now we have so much that has grown now, with especially the character of Pythio that Peppermint plays, that has really developed with Michael Mayer and James Magruder, that is even being more progressive and showing even further representation and queerness on Broadway that's never been done before, which is exciting that we've always wanted to do this, that we're even pushing it further as time has gone.
I was just going to say, a lot of our super fans are like kids, you know, teenagers that identify as they, them, non-binary, gender fluid, and this is the first time that they've had a story sort that's in the mainstream of any form of entertainment sort of speaking for them and telling
celebrating
their story.
Them.
Yeah, and it's really exciting, and we go out to the autograph line, and there are kids that are there with their parents that, like, you know, that maybe the kids have had a hard time describing what they're feeling and what they're going through to their parents, but here we have a story that the families can all come to together and, like, learn with each other, and it's really special.
I think especially, yes, that it's all celebratory and joyous. Yeah. There really isn't any angst, and the whole journey of the show is everyone learning who they're authentic self is and celebrating that. And so, yeah, it's that we have all these kids, and so for a Broadway musical to have a character who identifies as non-binary played by a transgender woman, it speaks volumes to a lot of people who haven't had the chance to be able to see that up there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that part of the sort of gender fluid aspect of the show too for me is that you have like men singing songs that we like associate with Belinda Carlisle singing and like with you singing Mad About You is sort of a great example of
in,
that
like,
I mean
the same key
those
are Hive
and like even our ensemble men are, you know, they're not dressed in all butched out clothes, you know, there's like they sort of have like half skirts and they're wearing eye makeup and like, you know, the whole thing is the world is really cool.
We actually have one of our offstage swings who covers the ensemble. We have a girl and a boy who cover, but then we have this one girl who covers all the ensemble members, and she has gone on in a male track. And it's really cool because, you know, there's a couple small parts that she can't do, like the suitors who all don't wear tops while they're dancing, so she doesn't do that number. Yeah. But it was really cool to see her go on in a male track and do all the things with all the men and, again, like, further that message we're trying to get out there.
How do you like having your lady pop star moment?
Oh my gosh, I love it.
It's like karaoke dreams come true.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so fun, like rolling around on the top of staircases, belting for my life.
Pretty much what you do.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's really fun. And I love Musadors that, like, in the end, you know, it's a funny joke. And myself, too, being, like, a cisgender white male, like, you know, haha, there's a man in a dress the whole show. But then at the end, you hear from the character that, no, this has actually meant something to me. And yeah. By disguising myself in this female form, I've discovered a feminine side of myself. And I think I'm ready to have that be a permanent part of me and embrace it and, you know, be a son and daughter both to yeah. whomever.
Amazing. So you, I've seen you two in Spring Awakening.
Oh, wow.
And
a million years
like a
ago.
A decade ago.
A really long time. Yes.
Yeah. It was a decade ago.
We old. But Bonnie, this is your Broadway debut, which is like woo, crazy. Woo, what a debut. Yeah. But it seems to me like you're all playing characters that are like maybe not what you would traditionally get to play in like a traditional big Broadway musical. There's something unorthodox about all of them. So I was just curious to hear like what kind of roles you had been doing, if this is like a huge break for you in some way, or if you feel like you're getting to express a side of yourself as an actor in these roles that like you wouldn't ordinarily.
Well, I mean, yeah.
so much.
No, it's a podcast. I'm a plus size lady, and I never get to play the pretty girl ever. And there's so much it's crazy. The revolutionary idea of body positivity on a Broadway stage that nothing in the dialogue has to do about it it's sad, but there isn't another situation that I can think of that was a plus size woman in a love story. Celebrating herself and everyone celebrating her that doesn't mention my appearance other than that it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that's been a really amazing, crazy thing because usually, typically, so many roles that will come my way, whether it's film, TV, stage, will have kind of, you know, either jokey things about like kind of fat shamey kind of things or kind of explain why you exist or if you're struggling with your self-love and how do you overcome it. Kind of stuff that's so annoying and awful. And that's something that has really struck me at the stage door, the amount of people that are connecting with someone loving themselves on stage. I never get to do that. And there are days when I'm having a hard day where it's helpful to have to go on stage and love myself. It's healing. And I forget how important that is. And it's a good reminder to like practice self-care and self-love. So I am ecstatic to be able to do that on a stage.
And I feel like it's a great sign for Broadway going forward, too, that, like, people are responding in a major way to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, like, yeah. I mean, I feel like, not to diminish anyone else, but, like, you're getting such great buzz from the show, and everybody is like, whoa, where'd she come from?
She's been here in New York City.
And I just hope, I really do hope that there is a change and a shift in how we're presented and how we're seen, that we're human beings who do fall in love and who do love themselves. And I have hope. I'm hoping that people come and that do see the response of people craving it, that it's important. It's just not been done and it's sad. Yeah.
What about you guys?
I mean, I guess I'm kind of a goofball. So it's cool to be like, to get to play an ingenue sort of like leading lover man, but also still
leading
be. That's my new phrase instead of ingenue. Yeah, so it's cool to be able to play that sort of role, but still bring my sense of humor to it and like be goofy and silly and fun and not just like a pretty boy. Because I usually fall in between that. I fall in between the sort of like goofy best friend guy and then like the I don't know, leading man sort of thing. So it's nice to like to have a role that sort of rides that both lines.
Mm-hmm. I guess I have a confession to make, which is when we first started working on the lab, I thought Philoclea was boring. And I realized that was me deciding that this pretty I mean, even though she's referred to as playing this sort of angelic, delicate princess, ingenue character, wasn't very deep or didn't have that much to her. And, you know, she had a lovely speech at the end. But in, at first I thought, I kept trying to do stuff to make it interesting. Like, I kept being like, how do I make her really interesting? And Michael Mayer very smartly said, he could see me doing stuff. He says, stop doing that. Stop doing this. It's, you don't need to do that. And when I'd be like, oh, okay, are you sure that it's not just kind of boring? He'd be like, no, it's good. And you are interesting, and just play the truth of it. Stop putting stuff on. And honestly, over the last couple of years, I've fallen deeply in love with her. And, I'm a very dark person, and Philoclea is full of light and only light. And I think I was always trying to, you know, put some more angst in, and Michael kept telling me no, which is very smart. And when it finally clicked towards the end of the lab, especially, it really clicked. And then as we worked for San Francisco, I went, oh, I see who she is. Just, she's so grounded and so open and so, hopeful. And that's not how I typically walk through the world every day. So it's definitely exciting to be an actor and find that in me and find that through her, and then spread that to an audience and realize, oh, you don't just have to, I've been in a lot of sad shows. Like, I've typically been in very sad plays.
I've seen you in pretty dramatic roles, and this is, yes, like showing a sense of humor that I hadn't seen before.
Exactly. So that there, it's, I keep saying to people, I was like, oh, it's really nice to leave work, like, with a smile on my face. I was like, I don't think I've ever experienced that. I keep saying, like, these are good princesses to play, because they're really, they might seem deceptively simple on the outside, but there's a lot going on inside of them.
Do you guys get a sense that there's this sort of, like, I guess as someone who went to see it on the very early side and is now at this place, like, it feels like there's this sort of, like, building momentum behind the show, like, more and more people are kind of finding out, like, oh, wow, this is actually a really good show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's very much a word-of-mouth show, which we sort of knew, because even as you said, oh, it's so complicated to explain, yeah. And it has always been, like, just get your butt in the seat, because everyone who does is ecstatic about it, and yeah, so it's very much word of mouth, and I'm happy when people have come because someone told them to come. Amy Adams came, and she said that they came because one of their friends came the week before and said it was great, so that was really exciting.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, it's building to try to, you know, keep getting the audiences in, and that our fans have been really passionate and amazing. And I saw something on social media, they do numbers of, like, how much different shows are talked about, and we were like the top of social media mentions for quite a while, because people that have come have been really passionate, which has been amazing. We have one fan who, they just flew in from California, they're non-binary, and tonight will be their 19th time seeing the show.
Oh my God.
They live in California.
They saw us. They saw us in San Francisco.
But they, even that was like a 3-hour drive to come up, and it's amazing. And now they have, this will be their, I think, their third trip to New York, because they'd come, they left, they came back for opening, and now they're back again to see it. It's just, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, we know we're doing something right over at the Hudson, that it's,
have
the
you
audiences
ever
have been
face,
really beautiful.
Have you ever caught their face during the end of the show sometime? Like, if they're sitting closer, I'll just steal glances at them during the end of the show and all the proclamations of love are happening, and Peppermint is doing her speech about being non-binary, and it's the best. It's the absolute best. And I'm okay with being a little unprofessional for that moment, because it makes me so happy.
I'm amazed that you can, like, break focus
for one second
and then get back.
I can't look into the audience.
Oh, I'm so bad.
I always look.
Not, which is why I'm always mad, because I'm like, somebody's texting, because I'm looking at everybody.
I have to ask, I heard a rumor that there is, like, a secret bar in the Hudson. Is this true?
Oh, the Ambassador Lounge. Yes.
Yeah.
Is it no longer a secret?
It's not a secret. How do you get in?
It's just VIP. You pay an extra like $75 or something on your ticket, but it comes with a free bottle of champagne.
And you get to have the drink waiting for your intermission.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's like a smoky lounge sort of.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Green velvet seats. And all that.
It's gorgeous.
Amazing. Well, and if you can't get in there, I feel like people should know there are like frozen drinks in the lobby.
Which is apropos for
a Go-Go's musical.
Also, I think we have one of the largest bars like in a Broadway house, like with some of like amazing top shelf liquors, and I mean, it's gorgeous.
The Hudson's an amazing theater. The history of it is really exciting because it was basically the first Broadway theater, and then it was shut down for a long time and it was other things, and then they renovated it and it reopened last year with Sunday in the Park with George with Jake Gyllenhaal. So it's the oldest and newest Broadway theater.
Yeah.
But it was also it was run by this man named Henry Harris who died on the Titanic. And his wife got on the last lifeboat and survived and became essentially the first female producer of Broadway theater in 1912, 1913. So there's cool history. Yeah. And then it also used to be
The Tonight Show.
And there's a door there. I will say this, like on the other side of the box office. Have you ever come out of the elevator?
Oh, yeah.
There's a door that says NBC Studios that's still up, and
it's cool.
It's a very cool place to be, and a very cool place to see a show in. Plus, there's a lot of leg room, which I feel like I should mention.
It's comfy seats, yes, comfy seats, frozen drinks. And the Go-Go is what more could you want?
Yeah, right,
exactly.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming, you guys.
Thank you for having us
on the show.
Thank you.
Head Over Heels is currently playing at the Hudson Theater on Broadway. If you're a fan of the Billboard on Broadway podcast, please give us lots of nice reviews and stars on iTunes. You can also find us on many other platforms, including Google Play and Spotify. If you would like to tweet about the podcast, use hashtag Billboard on Broadway. You can find me on Twitter at Rebecca Milzoff. You can see pictures of the guests who visit, among other things, on my Instagram at YaDownWithRMM. And hope to have you back at the podcast next week. Blah, 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 blah.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.